Now, instead of today, we're going to learn a different meaning behind, if I can use that word meaning, or I should say another conclusion that's going to come to wrap us up to understand why, if I can't do this, why the means of these two work together. This part of my studies here, I'm not going to put online as of yet, because in order to clarify a phrase in there, I have to bring forth at least perhaps 30 to 40 different verses in the Tanakh to be able to clarify my proof. But really isn't that hard. All you have to do is pick it up and read it in Hebrew. If you don't know how to read Hebrew, you know, maybe you need to learn to figure out how you do that. I mean, the Hebrew writings and the Hebrew lectures, not something that's been transliterated. Okay, you understand what I'm saying? We have not had yet, and they're supposed to have been started by Jeff, a Hebrew class. I'm not putting pressure on him. I'm just saying it's just something that if he thought he could do it, he'd be able to do it, and how to do that, and when to do it, the timing is really going to be pretty taxing. But let's go to Leviticus, the 23rd chapter. It says, I know that's the book that my daughter has. And we're going to begin in verse 19. chapter 19, and I'm going to read it as it would be written in Hebrew, but of course in English, so you would understand. The Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, When you come into the land which I give to you, and reap its harvest, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. He shall wave the sheaf before the Lord, accept it on your behalf. On the Shabbat, the priest shall wave it. You shall offer on that day, you shall offer on that day when you wave the sheaf a male lamb of the first year without blemish as a holah offering to the Lord. His grain offering, or his minhah offering, shall be 2/10 of an ephah, a fine flour mixed with oil, an offering made by fire unto the Lord for a sweet aroma. And its drink offering of wine, 1/4 of a hin. You shall eat neither bread nor parched grain or fresh grain until the same day that you have brought an offering to your God. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations and all your dwellings. Now, for you who look at that section for perhaps the first time, it's going to say, on the Shabbat after. After the Shabbat. That word after is not in the Hebrew writings, and you can get any written Hebrew Tanakh. I've got 3 of them. They all say, on the Shabbat. Now, as I said last week, that in some of the teachings of both Rabbinic and Esoteric Jews, there are 2 different ways they look at it. They look at this particular one being the Shabbat was the 15th day of the first month. Now, technically speaking, it is not called a Shabbat. It is called a holy convocation. Do you know that Shabbat is not called a holy convocation? The only holy convocations are the high days. And that's all. They are the ones that God commands for you to come for Him to talk to you. Now, it doesn't mean you can't go with a group of people and be together with them any day of the week. Right? That's not a sin to stand and worship God with a group of people. That's not the sin. What we're looking at here is that the word Shabbat, in all places in the Torah, every time they use that word, rest, or Shavuot, not Shavuot, Shabbat, it always referred to the seventh day of the week. Now, in rabbinic teaching, they say, not in this case. Wait a minute. In all other cases. You remember, how many of you have heard of Kenan Ham? Mm-hmm. And he makes a statement, day one, day two, day three, and of course the evolutionary says, that's not talk about a day, it's talk about a period of time. It could be 1,000, 2,000, 3 billion years between each time, you know? And that's a kind of comical thing. And he says, that's really weird, because you've heard him say this, right? How come every place else in the Bible a day is a day, but not within the first book of chapter? Now, Genesis 1:1 is not a day, meaning a day. Evening and morning, it's spelled out. Evening and morning, spelled out. Evening and morning. And it can be difficult and silly to say, oh, we're talking, you know, each one of those days was a representation of 2 billion years or 3.25 billion years, whatever you want to think you might want to add up to. It doesn't add up. Well, same thing, situation here with the Shabbat. Why in all other cases, always the seventh day of the week, except, of course, in this particular location. That doesn't add up, does it? Doesn't make sense. Second teaching, that is always on a Sunday. Right? Because it says, the Karaite Jews, and even the Christian world, have a belief that what we call Pentecost lands on a Sunday. Why do we think it lands on a Sunday? Because, after all, it's the day after the regular weekly Shabbat. Because that's what it says. But the word after, again, is not in Hebrew. And you can go to any scholar, any Hebrew scholar, as long as he's Orthodox. I'll be really honest with you there. And or use the Orthodox translation. That's probably the easiest one. An Orthodox translation of either the Torah or the whole Tanakh. And they'll tell you what it says. The rest day. On the rest day. On the Sabbath day. Okay? That's pretty evidence in evidence. So I don't know if I'd go any farther in that, but you understand what I'm saying? The word after is not there. There's a very distinct word. It starts with mim. You know what menorah means? What does menorah mean? Sorry, what? Aura is light. Mim is from light or on light. So we're saying from the Shabbat, not after, or on the Shabbat, because the mim is there in Hebrew. All right? Not that other Hebrew word for after. Entirely different word. And the word after is never used as a prefix. Nor is it used as a suffix. It's a word of and by itself, and it stands alone. Do you understand what I'm saying? You won't find it in the Hebrew writings. You won't find it in the Tanakh. Yes?
I thought that word, I can't remember. Just begin with mem. I can't remember what it is now. But doesn't it mean morrow?
Okay, your Old English, correct. We're talking Old English.
I know, but it means morrow if you were to put it into... Actually, it can mean the day following.
No. Morrow is an old, old English word, not a Hebrew word.
Yeah, I know.
Morrow means next. Old Hebrew means... Old English means the old-fashioned word. We're talking 1611 English, not modern English. And that means... next, on the next Shabbat. That's what we translated literally. It was translated into 1611 English and translated into what we do, modern English. We don't know. See, we use the word tomorrow. But that isn't what it says. It says morrow, which generally refers to the daylight period of the day, of that 24-hour period, evening and morning.
Okay?
You have to look into in the Old English. 1611 stuff, you got to go back that far. I had to go back that far to find that one out. It's a difficult source to find, but you'll find it. Knowing you. All right, so we're at this point, right? Yes, in Old English, King James says, on the morrow of the Sabbath, or on the morrow from the Sabbath, meaning the morrow part of the Sabbath section, like menorah. The light from. Where does the light come from? Where does the light come from? Well, no, talk about physical menorah. That was built.
Fire. Fire, well.
Where?
It comes from the oil that comes from the wick that comes from the...
This is where it comes from. And it goes up into the wicks. All right? From the aura comes from the base. It goes up. Fire, when it starts, what happens? Does it come down? It goes up. When you light, you decide to burn a piece of paper, guess what's going to happen? The light's going to go up, but it has to come from someplace. Do you understand what I'm saying? We're talking a very simple English word and a very simple Hebrew word. All right, but that's on the off the subject matter here. But do you know what I'm talking about? From, all right, because the oil's down here. We know that they don't put the oil here. They put the oil down here, and the wicks went down and grabbed the oil and it siphoned it up. All right. Any more questions about that subject matter? We're going to the next section. Continue on with verse 15 in Leviticus. Oh, you have a question.
This morrow, are you saying, where exactly is that? When you say in the Shabbat, just tell me an hour.
The word morrow is Old English.
Right.
It's not in Hebrew.
Okay, but they both mean what you were both.
Next.
You both
it means next. The word morrow means next.
Okay.
So on the morrow of the Sabbath, or on the next Sabbath, okay? Which wasn't the next day. Tomorrow is the next day. But morrow means next. You understand what I'm saying? Tomorrow is very specifically meaning the next day, or the next time period. Now we're not talking about a time period specifically of days. We're talking on the next Shabbat. All right? Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did you, that okay?
Yeah,
okay, you got
yeah.
it. Okay. It's funny to look at that old English word because we use it and I haven't really know where it came from.
Yeah.
It's kind of archaic, a little bit, you know, old fashioned. Whoever speaks that way, anyway, you know.
We've had this discussion before regarding this word.
Yeah.
But it still throws off the count.
No, it doesn't throw off the count. I'll show you.
I know you're going to say that, but that's what other people will say.
Well, I know. I'm looking at what is written.
I know.
Everything's based upon what is written, to my mind. And I teach what is written. I don't go by what tradition tells us to count. The Karaites count by different traditions. The Rabbinic counts by different traditions. Those two different traditions are what they are. They're traditions. Okay? And I'm saying, which tradition should we follow? Should we follow the Karaite tradition or should we follow the Rabbinic tradition? Well, what if they're both wrong? What do we follow? We follow what is written. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I follow what's written.
Okay. You know what? Christians have an awful lot of traditions. That doesn't make them evil. They just have traditions.
Which make the Word of God of no effect.
It can. In other cases, it cannot. It depends upon what their tradition is. Mm-hmm. Okay? If the traditional Christian says, I must pray, is that not correct? Yes. Now, the traditional tradition may not understand, and the traditional Jew may not understand some of the aspects. I am probably guilty for a lot of things. I don't understand what is written. Okay? As I talk with her today, I'm very careful about introducing what I understand, because I don't want it to be this is my belief, therefore I'm going to interpret the word of the living God to satisfy my belief. I've been frightened about this subject matter for many, many years, at least 20. Yes?
For every problem that this concept presents, there is a legitimate answer. And that's the name of the game. Because this works technically on every point. There are a lot of arguments that come up against it, but each one of those have a problem. And one of the main problems with the other camps are that they have Pentecost on a Sunday or a Monday, and keeping God's laws, you can't have a Pentecost on a Sunday or a Monday. It can't happen without God making people break this out. So there has to be a third answer. It isn't Sivan 6, because at Sivan 6 you end up disregarding Resurrection Day. Mm-hmm. Well, would God have just so happened to have, he forgot to make Resurrection Day a high day. So would God. I mean, he doesn't do that.
Everything God does has to do with the holy day. We know that. And it's very, very important. And we're looking at here now, and we're trying to figure out and understand what is the picture that's telling us. Because of tradition, we have to put it aside. Now listen, if you really firmly, and I will tell this to you very much, okay? If you really, within your heart, within your soul, within your being, believe that Pentecost is tomorrow, for all crying out loud, keep it. The Apostle Paul so says so. Even if this is the right day, and you keep this one, and not tomorrow, but in your heart you think it's contrary to the Word of God, don't do it, even though it's right. Because it's sin unto you. That's hard for us in our minds through this 20th century to picture doing something that's right could be a sin. Well, here, we're not talking 20th century. We're talking first century after Christ. We're talking about the writings of Paul. And that's the attitude we must have, because why? He is the apostle to the Gentiles. We have learned an awful lot from that man. The reason why you are here today is because of what that man wrote. You're not here because some evangelist got you motivated. You're not here because, I sinned. You got here because the Apostle Paul said something to you through his writings. If it's not his, then it would have to be Matthew. It would have to be Mark. And Luke, a Gentile, a goyim. It had to be somebody that's written in that New Testament that has brought you to this location. And everything is centered around what the apostles said. Everything is centered around what the apostles are teaching. So we're looking at what the apostles are teaching today. What did they teach? Did they teach the book of Matthew? Did they teach the book of Luke? Did they teach the book of Romans? Or did they teach the Torah? Did they teach the prophets? Did they teach the writings? Did they teach the Psalms? Look at their writings. They quote Psalms, they quote the prophets, they quote the Torah. That's where their teachings come from. So that's what we must look at. Okay. I'm going to try my very best to quit 4 o'clock. 15th verse of Leviticus 23. And you shall count for yourself from the Shabbat, from the day you brought the wave sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Shabbats shall be completed. Not a really odd word. Doesn't mean ending. It means be included. The 7 Shabbats will be included in this count. The 7 Shabbats will be included within the count. What count? Do you see there's a second picture here, another story, another thing that He wants, God, the Creator of heaven and earth, wants us to see and do and participate in. And one of them is this. Count 50 days from the morrow of the Sabbath. Or the seventh Sabbath. So now we call, in a sense, count backwards. What are you going to land on? The 17th day of the first month. All right. I want you to listen to the words. We'll try to speed this up a little bit. Let's backtrack up. The first part of, I think it's verse 9 or 10. And he says, when you come into the land which I have given you, and you reap its harvest, listen to what he says. When you reap this harvest, you shall bring a shaft of the first fruits, plurality. Listen to the plurality here. Of your harvest to the priest. He shall wave the shaft before the Lord. Now, what is this telling us? We'll get back to this thing in a minute because I've something else I want to tell you. Now we're coming down to the second part. Keep this part about a wave sheaf and the shaft. Now we're going to go down to the other part. Let's continue on here. Count 50 days on the morrow of the 7th Shabbat. Then you shall offer a new grain offering to the Lord. You shall bring from your dwellings 2 waves of 2 tenths of ephah. And you shall have fine flour and bake with leaven. They are the first fruits, plurality, of the Lord. Now how can you have two first fruits? We'll get to that in a minute. Apostle Paul kind of spits it out. You shall offer on the bread 7 lambs of the first year. Now wait a minute. This is very fascinating. The first one is just 1 lamb as a whole offering, and then the minhah offering. And nothing else. Did you notice that? Down here now he says, you shall offer on the bread 7 lambs of the first year without blemish, 1 young bull, 2 rams. This shall be a whole offering unto the Lord, for with the grain offering, the minhah offering, and their drink offerings, these offerings made by fire, sweet aroma to the Lord. You shall sacrifice 1 kid goat as a sin offering, and 2 male lambs of the first year as a sacrifice of shalom offering. Now you see this little picture. So we're seeing here that on the first, there's only 1 wave sheaf, and the only thing is connected to it is 1 lamb as a whole offering and the minhah offering. All right, now we're in what's called Shavuot, or the 50th day from a given point. Do you understand what I'm saying? Have I lost anybody there? The offering is different. Now there are 2. 1, 2. Now we have an awful lot of interpretations of what they mean. We will not cover that at this particular moment. The priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits as a wave offering before the Lord with the two lambs. They shall be holy unto the Lord for the priest. And you shall proclaim on the selfsame day, or on the same day, that a holy convocation unto you. Here is a holy convocation. Now, the seventh day of the first month, it happened during the time of them entering into the wilderness of Etam, there was not a holy convocation. Do you understand the difference between the two terms? Now he says there's going to be a holy convocation. You should do customary work on it. You should be statute forever. Now listen to this. When you reap the harvest of the land, this is the only place that it really stands out in Scripture, and at this particular point in time, on what's called the 50th day. Remember, the seven Shabbats included with the count of 50. Do you understand what I'm saying? So we have two different things to count. One is seven Shabbats, and the other is 50 days. What is it that we're supposed to be paying attention to? Here we read what it's all about. It's called the first fruits, plurality. It's important to know plurality here for this moment in time. It'll get you my point. All right? But out of that first fruits plurality, only one wave shift is presented on the Sabbath between the two days of unleavened bread. Down here, we have two. Why not 40? Why not 12? Why not 144? That's a good number, right? Why two? What does the lamb represent? Speak up. Did somebody say something? What does the lamb represent?
Messiah.
So why are there two lambs killed on this day? They both represent the Messiah? The seven of them are killed on this day. What, they all seven represent the Messiah? What does this sheep represent? We, Apostle Paul made a statement, we are counted as sheep for the slaughter. Do you understand that? Mm-hmm. And what often when he talks about the shepherd, what does he say? My sheep fold, my fold, thy sheep is over here. I have another fold over here. Who's he talking about? A bunch of millions of messiahs? What's he talking about?
The two houses.
Get that part in mind. It's the two houses at this particular point. I'll get you to prove it to you if you listen to what I have to say today. Because a very specific, unusual, and odd commandment is made here. And most of us have not a good answer for it or how it will be done. But the eternal creator of heaven and earth can do it. So we're seeing his action. We're seeing what he is going to do. We see his pattern. And then we're doing something physical about this crop so we see and understand what it is that the eternal creator of heaven is doing. Not what we're doing. Every holy day is the actions of the creator of heaven and earth. Not our actions, not our thoughts, not our mind, not our understanding. It has to come. It has to come from the eternal and nobody else. So he's telling us something here. He says, I want you to do something. I want you to take two wave sheaves. Now listen very carefully to what it says. I'll read it again. That apart. I think it's verse 22. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field when you reap, nor shall you gather any gleanings from your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the stranger. That's a weird, odd command. Let me ask you a question. If you can understand the question, don't have to answer it. Just think about the question. So you have this one big, huge wheat field. Let's say it's an acre, or 2 acres, or 3 acres. Now he says, oh, time for harvest. Okay. What am I supposed to do? I'm not supposed to reap the corners. Okay. What, the four corners? What if my land's not a corner? What if my land's round? What if my land is oval? What if my land is... Well, all these questions come into your brain. No. What is the marker? You know, when you actually could have a corner of a land that could have 7 corners, depending upon the outlay of your property, right? You could have 3 corners. Well, I got here. My property's really weird. I can only... There's a corner. Only got 3 corners. Now, what's he talking about? We're not talking about just something you're supposed to do. It's telling us what God's going to do. Now he comes through here and he says, now, I don't want you, now, plus, nor shall you gather any gleanings from your harvest. Now, wait a minute, that's the two commands there. Did you see that? Did you notice that before? One is you don't reap the corners, and secondly, you don't glean from the harvest. What? Where in the Bible do we have such an example?
Ruth.
She wasn't out there harvesting, was she? No, but she was gleaning. Do you understand what I'm saying? So even though the house of Israel and the house of Judah are the remnant of the promise, they are supposed to leave behind for the stranger and the widow, or not stranger, but the poor and the stranger, so they may be able to come in and get some of the harvest. Not that they grew. Not that they harvested. Not that they sweat the sweat of their brow on, but what you did. Do you understand? So the burden here is, well, the word of the law, is now you must not clean up after yourself, if I can use that terminology. Let the stranger and the poor come in and get the gleanings. Yes?
So what the comment, because I believe we're living in the end time, I don't have to come today for Shavuot, because I have other plans, and I know I have the knowledge, but I don't want to put it into practice because I just learned it a couple months ago. And I don't think we have to change to do or be like you or to do what you're doing because we're coming in at the end times. I don't believe we have to do this. We don't have to change. This is the comments I'm hearing about today. Is that what you're talking about?
We'll get into the New Testament today.
What?
Okay, we'll get into the New Testament today because this is what's heading.
But that's a comment I got today.
I know you're going to get the comment, but listen, a man convinced against his will is the same opinion still. A woman who's convinced against her will is the same opinion still. Don't try. Their will is already set.
I knew that.
So don't try to change it.
This is what I heard.
Oh yeah.
I just carry it. I don't own it.
Jeff.
Perhaps it's similar to the encounter that Messiah had with the lady who was begging, who was from a neighboring nation, who was begging for healing for a child.
That's right.
And Messiah, said to her, well, what? Do you expect the dogs to feed, from the scraps that come from the table?
Well, she made this statement.
Yes.
Because why should I heal you?
Yeah.
Why should I give you the blessings? Well, hey, even a dog gets it. Got the gleanings. And the Messiah, therefore, in that particular show, gives the gleanings, of the harvest.
Basically,
yes.
don't keep all this to yourself, basically.
That's right. And what I told her, Jeff, just have a second. I'll get to your question. What I told her during the break, what had happened in the first century, the rabbinic ones who knew didn't want
to share?
The goyim to understand. They weren't. They were harvesting, but not leaving the gleaning. They were harvesting, including all corners. We're not going to bow to allow or permit. And what happens when the sheep are led astray? What happens when the sheep have no shepherd? What happens when the sheep have nobody to teach them? They scatter, and they're up there for slaughter. All right? And if you ever read Wally Schubert's book, there had been more Christians killed than you could think about. But Christians don't yell out. They don't scream. They don't shout. They don't go up and protest. They just die. I'm not speaking against the Jews, by the way, that did that during the Holocaust, because they didn't speak out either. They didn't speak out. And sometimes we sort of think, oh, what's wrong with you Jews? Why didn't you speak out? Because they've been taught and raised and understand something that God says, ah, vengeance are mine, saith the Lord. I will repay. So we as goyim, Gentile, when we look back on the Holocaust, we shouldn't look how dumb they were. Because they were processing and being taught and did what they've been raised up from the point of youth. The Lord is going to avenge my death. I'm not going to avenge my death. God is. And I believe very strongly today, this is my personal belief, but every Jew that died in that Holocaust is going to be avenged.
Amen.
That's my belief. That's why those quotes, souls under, not on top of, not even with, but under, not above, not alongside, but under the throne. They have not been resurrected up, nor has their vengeance. What's it crying out for? When are you going to avenge? See, sometimes we in this Christian world, we have been told that if you don't accept the Messiah today, you're going to go to hell. You're going to go into ever-burning fire, and you're never going to die. You're always going to be alive, but you're always going to be hurting. You're always going to be burning. You'll never die. You'll never die, but you're in death. Wait a minute. That doesn't add up scripturally. Nowhere near. Where am I at now? Yeah. You guys, this Shavuot, counting 50 is very important. I've got to get going. I got 20 minutes left. And I've only got to, well, anyway. Please. To me, this is a very, very important day to understand. And it's important on today to understand why it says count 50. It's one thing to know it's Shavuot. We know it's one thing that says it sees seven Shabbats. But it says they are included within the count. The seven in the count of 50. Don't exclude it. Include it. All right? Do you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Hope I haven't lost anybody. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No.
Okay. Good part.
What
part?
When you say don't exclude it, include it.
And when he says now, when he says the count 50 days, we're counting, talking about the 50 count now, not the 7 weeks, but the 50 count. It says there too, when the Sabbaths have been, Sabbaths have been completed. It's a bad, bad word in English. It means the seven Sabbaths included. Add them in to that number. Okay. Don't leave them out. You don't remove the house of Israel and you don't move the house of Judah and think it only applies to what happened in the book of Acts. We'll go there. Oh, the Spirit of God came down and guess who he picked? All right. Yes.
So, in other words, you have 50 days and in those 50 days, there are seven Shabbats.
Seven Shabbats included within that count of 50.
Right. So then there's one other day somewhere else.
One other day tomorrow?
No, just where one other day, because with 7 weeks, you got 49 days. So with 50
That's
days,
correct.
Seven Shabbats, there's one other day.
You include the 17th day. You include the day that you had the wave sheaf offering. Don't exclude it, include it. Very clear in Hebrew, you include that day. Yes, I had a question I forgot about.
No, I was just going to make a comment before. But so it's that you start your count on a Sabbath, and you end your count on a Sabbath. So
yeah, you start the Sabbath, you end the Sabbath.
Eight.
So you have a complete total of 50.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, that's 49 days, because the 7 Sabbaths plus this one Sabbath that was the first day, that's what
you said, that's what you count from, including it, not excluding it.
Okay, yeah. So you count from this, from 17.
You count that, number one.
One, and you go all the way down to this.
And you'll get exactly 50.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I already said that. I don't need to say that anymore. I'm going to move on. Let's go to Romans. I'm going to pop up some scriptures. And all we're going to talk about right now is the first fruits. We're going to use the first fruits, thinking plurality. I need for you to think of that word as a plurality and not as a single thing. All right? Do you understand what I'm saying? It's very important that we kind of have a picture of a plurality.
Romans,
I have said this, Romans 8th chapter, verse... Well, I'll get there in a minute. Okay. I hate this. I just lost track of what I'm going to say. Ah, sheesh. Romans 8 and verse 23. Not only, I'm just reading the verse. Not only that, but we also who have the first fruits, plurality, of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for the adoption and the redemption of our body. Verse 23. Romans 8, 23. Romans 16, verse 5. Greet my beloved Epaphras, if I can pronounce that right, who is the first fruits from Achaia to Christ. So he's talking first fruits in the plurality form. It's important that we have, and I want to accentuate the plurality. We have what's called the spring harvest. It's a different kind of crop, but it still has the first fruits, or the first crop being picked for the year. And we have Shavuot, like it is today, and it's the winter, or it's the wheat harvest. And you have a harvest that happens there, and it's called first fruits, but a different crop. Now we go into the fall time really quick, and we see there you bring in the, one of the main things you bring in is wine. Perishable fruit is not counted. Wine is counted. Why? Because it doesn't perish. All right, you could preserve it, so it winds up being the first. Wine has a picture of being the first. That's why Jesus says he is the vine, and you are the branches, and you will produce wine. Okay? We're producing the first fruits. We are a type of first fruits. We have a good clarification. We get here. Let's go to 1 Corinthians. First, I'm moving along pretty fast here because I want to end by 4 o'clock. So bear with me. 1 Corinthians 15th chapter. Called the resurrection chapter, right? It's not called resurrection chapter because it had to be a key thing about resurrection. It has to do with something else. Verse 20, but now Christ is risen from the dead and has become the first fruits, plurality, of those who have fallen asleep. Oh, wait a minute. Why is it plural here? Because he is part of the first fruits.
we'll get into more specific as we keep on reading what the Apostle Paul had to say. Okay? And think about this. He says, would you make your bread on Shavuot? Make sure you make it with
leaven.
All right? Verse 23, same chapter. This is very important. But each one in his own order, Christ the first fruits, plurality, after those who are Christ's at his coming. So there's nothing's going to come. Part of the first fruits is still there. The first fruits have always been there, spiritually speaking, now. From each one of the seasons, the three seasons of the year, he's picking this first fruit, this first fruit, this first fruit. And it repeats itself. Oh, another first fruit. Next year, another first fruit. Summertime, another first fruit. Fall time. Next year comes around. This is what's so important. We read, and we won't go there today, but remember it says there in Genesis, we talk about the Moedim. But amongst within that Moedim is the marking of the sun. And what does the sun do? There's a marking of the moon. What does the moon do? It's going to point things. It's a pointed time. In the years, it will give, the sun gives you what's called the pointed years. Oh, there's a year. Oh, there's another year. Oh, there's another year. Within that year, there are three seasons. And each one of those years, there's always a first fruit of that year. Not the first fruit you ever grew in your entire life. But every year there's a first fruit. Every year there's a new crop. Every year there's new wines. Do you understand what I'm saying? The sun is a marker of the Moedim. Based on a yearly cycle and not on a monthly cycle or a three-season cycle. The sun rules what? It rules the day. It rules the earth. It rules the time. It tells you what's going on. It tells you that it is in power. It is in control. It controls the moon. It's the one that gives the moon the light. The light does not get the moon from any other source except that which has been appointed by God. So every year, the sun comes back to its beginning cycle. Oh, that's the beginning of year one. What is it? Well, we have to look at what the Word of God says. And He says it's going to be when? In the springtime. That's what God said. That's the beginning of your year. Beginning of your months. So a lot of things happen in that one year. We have this thing sometimes when we do the new moon. We say, well, it's the waning is the one that's going away, and the, what's the other one?
The waxing.
The waxing. The waning is the waxing. You know, one's getting strong, and that one's getting weak. And somehow, sometimes, we think, oh, that must represent us. No, it represents a pointed thing. All right? We won't go there today, but just keep this in mind. Because every year we repeat the cycle, do we not?
Mm-hmm.
Every year, the only reason we repeat the cycle every year is because the sun is in a path. I explained to you before, it's in the path that was called the zodiac. And the zodiac is not, it's a Greek word, but it's not Greek. What is the word?
Zodi.
It's a Hebrew word, and it means path. The sun is on a path. We are joined with the sun. We are in a solar system that's on a path. And everybody looks up to the North Star. That's the only thing that doesn't move. Everything moves around the North Star, including the sun. And the moon and our planet, the whole solar system moves around what's called the North Star. It stays there. The whole our solar system, not the galaxy, our solar system orbits around that particular star. So we have appointed things. Things were appointed by the creator of heaven and earth. You know, he says, and he created the stars also. Almost like an afterthought. But lo and behold, there's a star up there where everything's been appointed circles around. Have you ever thought about that before? It wasn't by some evolutionary concept that we just happened to fall into the cycle. It's created. It's created. Now, go to 16th chapter of 1 Corinthians there. Verse 15, I urge you, brethren, you know the household of Stephen, or Stephen's, that is the first fruits, plurality, of Acacia. What do I read that, didn't I? Sorry, go to James 1, verse 18. James 1, 18. What's so beautiful about this particular verse? It can apply to any one of the three seasons. But I'm only bringing this out because it's Shavuot. James 1, verse 18. Of his own free will, he brought us forth by the word of the truth that we might be a kind of first fruits of his creation. Wait a minute, Adam and Eve were created before me one day. Yeah. So what is it being the first of the creatures, the first of the creation? What is he talking about? What do you think James was referring to? We surely are not the first. We're not even of the first. The very first was Adam and Eve. Right? Mm-hmm. That's what solid written scripture. James, you got it wrong. Right? Let's go farther. Romans, 14th chapter. I'm sorry, Revelations, 14th chapter. This is a very famous statement. All right, we all know it. We all know what it says. Isaiah 14th, 4th verse. These are the ones who are not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are the ones that follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These being redeemed among men, being the first fruits, plurality, to God and to the Lamb. That's 144,000 we're talking about, right? Verse 4. Revelation 14, verse 4. Now, that's kind of strange, isn't it? First fruits. Wait a minute. Adam, Eve. What about Abraham? What about Isaac? What about David? What about Jeremiah? What about Ezra? What about John the Baptist? They're part of the still first fruits. Yes.
So these first fruits are basically people that are first picked at given points in time.
Correct. That's why there's three seasons repeated every single year. How many years has he appointed? 6,000 years. That's not a whole lot of seasons, isn't it? Yes.
So is that why then in Hebrews that you get this sense that there is a day and he's called it a day?
Right.
So that whenever God is there for you, that is your harvest time.
That is your harvest time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is there a second fruits?
There is no listen to this. Yes. Wait a minute. She's asking a question legitimately. There is. Okay. If there's a first fruits plurality, there has to be a second fruits plurality or the remainder of the crops thereafter. We're not going to go there today, but it has to do with a statement that's in the book of Revelation. We will not go there today because I'm talking about Shavuot. Okay, I'm talking about Pentecost, basically. I'm talking about, today I'm talking about 50 days. Today I'm talking about the 50 days. Not Shavuot of and by itself, but Shavuot is included in the count of 50. That's why Leviticus is written the way it is written. All right. Is that hard to understand?
So, what then is the significance of this inclusion of Shavuot in the 50?
All right. What happens at the time you're supposed to do this? At the time you start to make two loaves of bread. We're including the two houses of Israel. They're the first part of the count. They're included within it. They're not excluded. The two loaves of bread represent Barukata Avinu Elohedu Hamotilachem Mima Heretz. That which comes from the earth. Not which comes down. The two loaves come from the earth. They got leaven in it.
That's right.
They're people.
Yeah.
All right. Oh wow. Let's go to Romans 11. Romans 11. Now in this chapter, all due respect, this chapter, most of the people who have and believe of what's called the two-house theory go to this particular chapter. I don't disagree with them. But there's something within this chapter that tells us something prior to the olive tree. I want you to pay close attention to it. Now, the Apostle Paul wrote this. Romans 11, 16. For if the first fruit, singular, is holy, the lump is holy. What's he talking about?
Israel.
He must be talking about bread, right? If the first one is holy, the lump is also holy. Now, who do you think the first is? All right. Now, let's go on. We'll move real quickly. I would love to talk to you about Acts, and I can't. I'm running out of time. Yes.
Verse 16, right? The dough, isn't that Abraham?
Romans, 11?
Yes.
Verse 16.
Right. Didn't you say one time that was Abraham?
I didn't say it was Abraham. I'm talking about a lump. The subject matter has to do with the lump of bread or a loaf of bread. It has nothing to do with anything else but a loaf. If the first fruit, singular, is holy, the lump is also holy. All right. Now we have to ask ourselves another question. I'm going to have to skip one of the most important parts of the book of Acts, but we're going to have to pass it all up. And Apostle Paul did something fantastic in there, and I can't cover it today. It's impossible. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, what?
Just tell us that.
Please give us a scripture so we can read it.
There you go.
What do you do?
We'll give you a few minutes.
Okay. In a nutshell.
Thank you, Richard.
The Apostle Paul is talking to, in this chapter, he is 20, 21, and 22. First of all, we go to verse 20. Don't read it today because I don't have time. He's talking about wanting to keep Pentecost at Jerusalem. All of the other years It was not an issue. And you read that chapter and he says, I have kept them with you. I have been with you in season. I have been with you. But this particular Shavuot, this particular Pentecost, I've got to go to Jerusalem. Mm. Now you ask yourself, why? So it's going to get you, I want you to read it. You've got to go all the way to where he finally concludes when he makes the statement. And he says, I must go to the Gentiles. Okay. Cleaning the corners of the harvest for the Gentiles. Apostle Paul is no more than what you would call the gleaning or the corners. And from that point on, he went and faced the emperor. And the blessings were given more and more. He spent more time in Rome. We don't know exactly how long, but now he's teaching more and more to the Gentiles more than ever. They were gleaning from him. He was doing what a teacher's supposed to do. And he says, I'm going to move you, Paul. You're not going to be amongst the harvest. You're going to be on the corners of the harvest. Where was Apostle Paul from? Jerusalem?
Tarsus.
Where?
Tarsus.
Is that in Judea?
No.
Is that in Galilee? No, it's outside of the crop of house of Israel and house of Judah. He was on the edges. He was on the sides. He was on the corners. What do you think? God made a mistake calling a guy out there in the middle of the corner? Meant there for the poor and for the stranger to pick, as well as the gleanings. And the Apostle Paul had one goal in mind, to teach as many Gentiles as he possibly could teach. Because that was his job. That was his function. That was his calling. That was his appointedness. Okay. I want to go to actually, I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to tell you what I must read read here, what I wrote down here. When you read this section in the book of Acts, it's all the way to the 22nd, where's Pentecost? It doesn't seem to be showing up. It doesn't show up anywhere, but it was driving for him to go to Pentecost. I have my suspicions, but I'm not going to go there because they're just my suspicions of what day it was. But he was arrested, pulled out by force, and beaten on a Sabbath. Remember, he went in there with some other people to complete their four men who had taken an oath. And James says, go in there with them, pay the due, pay the amount, and they have to shave their heads, join with them, that they will know that you are not saying to break the law. Yes. All right. Now, we're getting here, 10 commandments, please. We're aiming toward the Torah. We're aiming for the commandments. We're aiming what is written. Now, those are my suspicions. I can't document it because I don't have the history on it. All right. I want you to be aware of one thing. In Leviticus, let's go back to Leviticus, the 23rd chapter for a moment. If I can find my writings here. Page 5, 6, 8. 9, 10. Page 1. Did you notice? Oh, let me tell you this. I've come to understand something, and I had believed a myth or a miss. I'm out of time. Real quick. We have been told and taught that the first barley, you cannot harvest the barley crop until after the first sickle came down and was wave sheaved. Do you understand that? Mm-hmm. We've been taught that, but that's not what the Torah says. Listen carefully. What is written? When you have brought in the harvest of the entire crop, take one of the wave sheaves and wave it before God. That's the reason why there was a count of the firstborn on the 15th day of the first month, and the wave sheaf was done. Pick out of that firstborn and wave before God one wave, one crop, one thing. The harvest had been brought in. The same thing with Shavuot. The harvest is completely brought in. They didn't come out with one sickle. Now they come out with another sickle. They said, okay, now we can do this. The harvest has been brought in. And then he said, by the way, when you bring in the harvest, don't glean it. Wait a minute. What are you supposed to do first? Two little sickles? Or bring in the harvest? You bring in the harvest first. Then you have something to offer to God. You have something to present to God. So we talk about, this is history now. In Galilee, the land of Galilee, they always had to, most of the time, they always had to bring in the barley harvest, sometimes up to 2 or 3 weeks before the high priest permitted them to do so.
Yep.
Now we look back and we say, oh, the Galileans were breaking the law. No, they weren't. They were doing exactly what the thing said to do. They were bringing in the harvest. Do you understand? We have studied a thought amiss. Well, you can't very well pick up the sickle and pick up the first grain and say, oh, this is the ripe one, let's pick them all up. You bring them all in, because what did Jesus say to his disciples? Don't you know the fields are white, ready for harvest now? You can bring in the harvest now, disciples, and on Pentecost, take two of them wave sheaves and make them a loaf of bread and put leavening within it. On Shavuot. Yeah. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Every year there's a first crop. Every year there's multitudes of first crops. We're talking about when you harvest it, when it's brought. When we go to the Feast of Tabernacles, people, let me ask you a question. Do you wait until, oh, I can't bring in the grape?
No.
Well, I can only bring in one little bunch, and then you are 7 days with the first bunch, and you bring in all of the grapes.
Yeah.
And you have to process it long before the Feast of Tabernacles, and you have to turn it into the wine so it will be preserved for the Feast of Tabernacles. You're bringing in the harvest, people. I'm sorry. This is why this is such an important day to understand, because this teaches us something. It teaches us that why the apostles say we are the first fruits, we are kind of the fruits, we are already harvested.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Yes.
When you say that the fields are white.
White.
Okay.
It means they're ripe.
Which means ready.
Harvest.
Okay. Now we're talking about people too, right?
Well, yeah, the Feast of Shavuot has everything to do with people. Wheat represents people. Barley represents people. Wine represents people. It's a biblical concept. Everything God's created has a representation of what He's going to do to mankind.
Exactly. Well, for mankind. I can see that. So what's so special about Shavuot then concerning people is that's going to be a special harvest day.
Two loaves. Who comes in first? Book of Revelation says, the 144,000. Where are the 144,000? They are the tribe of the house of Israel. They're brought in first. They are the first. They will be included within the... What does it say there? Beneath them is the what? Innumerable multitude that man cannot count. They are also the first fruit, but they're not of the first harvest of the season, which is Shavuot, bringing in the house of Israel. Do you understand? When the Spirit of the Eternal God came down in Acts 2nd chapter, He wasn't just coming down and filling them with His Spirit. What was He doing? Harvesting them. Bringing them. He's brought them in. They're part of the harvest. And if you have the Spirit of the living God in you, guess what? You're part of the first fruits. First harvest. Okay? I've got to quit.
Thank you.